Good morning and welcome to the Eastman Financial Report. I'm Dan Eastman, your host, and today is Thursday, January 11th, 2024. Thank you so much for tuning in. We always appreciate your viewership, and thank you so much for watching WVW-TV. As you know, WVW-TV brings some amazing thought and intellectual stimulation to the great idea marketplace of ideas globally. And we're very happy to be affiliated with this network and also continue to do the work and the ministry that this network has been doing since 2006. So if you're thinking in any way of being able to support this effort, you can certainly go to the WVW-TV Foundation and make a donation to help keep this programming on the air, because you can imagine it's not cheap to run a network, especially a national and international network. And any support and help that you could conceivably provide is always deeply appreciated by the network. As you know, we're not a commercial advertising network, so we don't sell ads. We rely on the kind and generous donation of viewers such as yourself and also our corporate sponsors. And if you've been watching my show, you know that my corporate sponsor is Swiss America Trading, which is a great company. It's an American company based in Arizona. That is, they sell precious metals. They make a market in precious metals. And if you are thinking about adding tangible precious metals to your portfolio, and that means metal tangible, you can touch it and hold it, you have physical possession of it, you may want to give Swiss America a call at 1-800-519-6271 and ask them for some free information. Or go to their website, swissamerica.com, and if you use the promo code Eastman, which stands for Eastman Financial Report, you can shop around on their site and see what they have to offer, their specials, and you can also get some very good information. So in these times of economic turbulence, and of course we now have the election year with its political turbulence laying over onto an economy that is certainly very dynamic and yet very troubling, this is probably a time to be thinking about diversifying your asset holdings, and perhaps precious metals will be right for you. So if you're interested in that, give Swiss America a call and or go to their website, swissamerica.com, and see what they have to offer. When you're shopping for precious metals, you have to be very careful when you take tangible physical possession of tangible precious metals, because you're giving good Federal Reserve notes or digital currency in exchange for a piece of metal. And when you buy that piece of metal, you want to make sure that the quality of the gold or silver or platinum is what it's represented to be, and the quantity. So if that's to say you're going to buy a 1 ounce gold coin, which is no cheap investment, I mean, it'll cost you $2,000 or more, you want to make sure you're getting exactly 1 ounce of pure gold. And of course, when you buy tangible metals, if you go to Swiss America's website, you'll see that they have gold bullion coins, silver bullion coins, platinum good bullion coins, and those are minted by the U.S. Mint and other mints around the world, and they have a very high reputation for minting high quality products. So when you buy tangible precious metals, if you're thinking of adding an ounce or two of something, you will want to deal with a dealer or a vendor that is well known in the industry with a stellar reputation for quality and quality of goods, quality of service. And that's why I recommend Swiss America Trading, because they've been in this space a long time and their people know what they're doing. They're professionals. This is how they earn their living. They sell precious metals. They don't sell, to my knowledge, Swiss America does not sell paper towels and toilet paper. They just sell precious metals. So if you're going to make an investment in precious metals, you'd want to deal with a strong vendor with a great track record and reputation. And I recommend Swiss America, because not only are they a fine purveyor of precious metals, as I say, but they've also been a very generous sponsor of this network. So if you like to watch my show and you like to watch WVW-TV in general, this is how we stay online, and then you might want to give Swiss America a call, because they're a great place to buy metals. And certainly if you call them, 1-800-519-6271, or go to their website, if you can call, Tell them Dan Eastman sent you from the Eastman Financial Report, and they'd be happy to take the time necessary to explain how this works, what the costs are, what the risks are, what the benefits are, how do you store your metal, or, you know, there's a lot of questions, and they're the company to deal with because they are professional people. Okay, thank you so much, Swiss America. I appreciate your sponsorship. I want to move on to the news today. And of course, this is Thursday. And Thursday, as we know in America, is Unemployment Thursday. That's the day the Bureau of Labor Statistics, the federal government department, the bureau that puts out these statistics, comes up with weekly unemployment numbers. And of course, we're seeing unemployment numbers today that are not necessarily bad at all. There are two claims that we look at. There are the initial claims where people will go down to the unemployment office and file for unemployment. And then there are the continuing claims, which are those people who have been given the unemployment benefit and they stay on for a period of time. And of course, the number today is 202,000 people filed claims last week for unemployment. And of course, that's down substantially. The market was predicting 210,000. And the last number we looked at, which is always subject to adjustment, was 203,000. So this number came in at 202,000, which means 1,000 people fewer than was expected. And when you've been doing economics for a long time, especially if you look at statistical economics, econometrics, you know that there's things that happen in government data. Number one, they're always revising the data because they don't get it right the first time. And secondly, these things tend to be rather predictable. And when you look at the Christmas to through New Year's, those weeks, for better or worse, if you're facing unemployment, you're not going to be going down to the unemployment office during the holidays. Sometimes they're not open during the holidays. But by the time January rolls around and you take a look at what you've done to yourself on your credit card and how much money you've spent and you're unemployed, and that's a real motivator to start, you know, going back to the unemployment office. And we haven't seen that data yet. That was, you know, that's going to come out next week and the week after. So it's not surprising to me that we're seeing a diminution in unemployment numbers. And of course, we would prefer to see a zero number. Wouldn't it be great if the Bureau of Labor Statistics just dropped the reporting because nobody's applied for unemployment in the last 10 years? That isn't the case, but it's good to see the number down. We're not trying to hang the crepe here. We're basically looking at the statistics the way we see it, and we'll see if they revise the number. But at the end of the day, when you're going into an election year, we do not have an unemployment number problem. I mean, it's not bulging like it was in the 480, 490s back in the year 2008 when we had the last financial crisis. So it's a good thing. We don't want to see our fellow citizens unemployed. And of course, the administration will take credit. We have a booming economy. Unemployment is virtually zero. And that's all politics. But that's an interesting number to take a look at. We also had a bigger and more important number today. And of course, that is the consumer price index numbers that are released. And this one was a little bit troubling. I like to say ouch on this one, because the headline consumer price index was actually up 0.3% month over month from December. And that's an interesting problem, because when you look at the year over year, the inflation, the headline inflation, is up 3.4%, which was up, this gets a little murky, but it was 3.2% last month. It's now up 3.4%. Okay, 0.2%. But what it's showing us is there's a trend where the headline inflation is ticking back up. And that's not a thing the Federal Reserve wants to see, because they've been sort of in this holding zone, praying that the inflation rate will come down so that they can lower interest rates, so that that stimulates the housing market and the used car market and even the new car markets. And basically, when the interest rates come down, it's like pushing the punch bowl back toward the edge of the table where everybody can have a cup, and it stimulates the economy. Well, with this subtle uptick in pricing, especially during December, which was a very robust month for obviously a lot of retail happens in December, and the statistics show that the headline number is up, and that's problematic because we are thinking that the Federal Reserve is going to be cutting rates in March, maybe, who knows, but this may put the brakes on that because they'll be starting to meet again, the Federal Open Market Committee, Federal Reserve's Open Market Committee, and they're the folks that, you know, they meet, they have lunch, and then they decide where the interest rates are going. And what they're not seeing is a movement toward the predetermined bogey of 2%. They're looking at 3.4%, and that's year over year. So that's the 12-month sliding average, and it's still 3.4, which is larger than 2.0. That's the headline. But when you start to look at the core inflation numbers, and remember, the way they break these numbers down is headline is everything. And when you look at core, that's that they take out the fuel costs and they take out the food costs, and because those are much more volatile. And we've seen volatility in the fuel prices. As a matter of fact, at least up here in Wisconsin, and you're driving around and it's not uncommon to see fuel, you know, a gallon of regular gasoline for $2.49 instead of $3.49. This is from Wisconsin's perspective, it's great to see a little bit of relief on the gas at the gas pumps. So when you take out the fuel and food, then that's core inflation. And what they're trying to do is get, you know, everything but for fuel and food. And it gives you a little bit better indication of the general inflation trend because you're taking out the two most volatile units. And when you look at core, it's down below 4% for the first time since May of 2021, which is a good thing. It came in at 3.93, and that's a good thing because the core underlying less volatile number is softening below 4%. But, you know, those of you who can do math will realize that 4% is still double the 2% bogey that the Fed is trying to get to. So when the Federal Open Market, the Federal Reserve Open Market Committee meets coming up, you know, and, you know, in February, March, they're going to be looking at this persistent inflation that's built into the system. And that is going to be less of an incentive to cut rates. If they do cut rates for political reasons, because they've got to get the housing market back and together, and maybe the automobile market, and basically with the student loans out there and the credit cards, all the big spending, we talked about that earlier this week, that December was the second largest on record. So if you want to take some pressure off of interest rates and cut the rates, then it's a two-edged sword. You're going to be stimulating inflation. And quite often markets anticipate that. They realize that the Federal Reserve and the Federal Treasury are stuck in a vortex at this point where the debt has become too large and there's no political ability to soften that number, to make that number smaller. And of course, I talked about this earlier this week, the $1.66 trillion compromise, bipartisan, in Congress between the Democrats and Republicans, where they're going to do those four continuing resolutions, push them forward, and it's only $1.66 trillion in deficit. So when the markets see this, they think, you know, there's no serious attempt. And if there was a serious attempt to reel this in, we'd end up with a situation that would be rather stifling with respect to federal spending and also interest rates. So the core inflation rate, while it's gone down, doesn't necessarily reflect the happiest of times, especially when it's double the bogey. And then there's another number that is even more specific, and this is core inflation where they take out shelter. So you got food, shelter, and transportation fuel, okay? And when you take that out, it's super core, it's actually up 0.4%. So year over year on super core is actually 4.09%. So all three of those layers are demonstrating that we have in the system inflation that is baked in at about 4%. And I think the Federal Reserve is going to have to deal with that at some point. And that means the chances of big rate cuts are somewhat diminished. And if they do the big rate cuts to stimulate the economy for the election, that's just going to blow the inflation numbers higher and higher. And that's why you perhaps might want to give Swiss America a call at 1-800-519-6271 and talk to them about whether their products are right for you with respect to inflation. Because ultimately, you're going to need inflation protection in your life, whether it's real estate or gold or silver or art or, you know, collectibles or whatever floats your boat. You want to make sure you have a boat when the tide comes in, because when the great tide of inflation comes in and you don't have a boat, you are going to find yourself struggling for pay increases to match inflation, which, of course, that's a cost push on inflation. Inflation goes up, unions demand more money, workers demand more money. Well, then that just raises the bar. We saw this in the 1970s. It's not hypothetical. It's what stagflation looks like. So you might want to be thinking about that as to how do you position yourself to be able to ride the bull in 2024, because there's going to be a lot of bull. So, okay, let's also talk about beef prices. This is a story that's consistent with the inflation. And of course, if you've been to a grocery store, unless you just landed from Mars in a spaceship 2 days ago, if you go to look for a hamburger or filet mignon, what you notice is you're paying stunning prices for that protein. And I think Americans, have historically have enjoyed beef, and beef is very, very expensive right now. And I took a little dive into the beef production and what we're seeing nationwide. If you know how the beef industry works, it requires somebody to basically raise cattle, and then you raise the cattle and take them to market, and that's how beef gets into the supply chain. And effectively, when you think about a 9-month gestation time for beef cattle and a 15 months from the time they're born until they're raised and properly fed and prepared for market, you're looking at a 24-month process. If beef producers all started today, it's going to be 2 years before that new beef gets itself to market. So that's a cost that is going to stay high for at least through 2024 and into 2025, because you don't turn protein markets on a dime. And, you know, obviously, chickens are faster than this and that. But at the end of the day, when we look at the fundamentals in that core inflation, when you pull out the fuel and food, there are cost pressures that are being driven in a major way. It's also, when you look at the agriculture sector in general, food is made out in the country. See, it's either grown or that's where the animals, the pigs and chickens and the cows and the lambs and all the stuff is. And all of that has to be moved into markets, whether it comes by truck or rail. Most moves by truck. But at the end of the day, those are fuel prices that are pushing. And of course, I've just said that fuel prices in general in the United States have been soft. And of course, the question is with the turbulence in the Middle East and especially in the Red Sea, it's an interesting phenomenon that American gasoline prices are as low as they are because we're entering into an election year. And the question becomes, you know, why are they $4 a gallon or $3.50 a gallon 2 years ago versus, you know, $2 and what, 40, 49 cents today? And why is that? And I can, again, you know, you really have to look at the economy through the lens of a political process. Again, my show is not a political show, but it's an economic show, and you have to face the reality that during an election year, gasoline prices are low, unemployment numbers are low, everybody's happy. But the problem is we have this persistent inflation, and we have increasing debt, not only with consumers, but also at the federal government level. And at the end of the day, you have to be able to sort through these data points and start to put a picture together. And it's a troubling picture indeed. So I wanted to mention beef, and that's an important thing. And I talked about the unemployment numbers. I also wanted to bring up the idea of this national debt. I've been talking about this quite a bit. And this sort of segues into thoughts that I've been having that are somewhat troubling with respect to the national situation. And if you look at the national debt of $34 trillion, that's what the federal government has racked up in federal spending that was not covered by taxes. So the federal treasury has to borrow the money, and they have. They've been borrowing it basically since World War II. And it was always a little it was always a little national debt until 2008, when it's gone absolutely crazy. And now today we're at record high debt. And of course, I mentioned yesterday that the next 10 indebted countries added up together don't equal the United States. I mean, we're so far on the top of the heap that there's no heap, there's just the top. And when you break that down, I was talking about this yesterday with the number of tax-paying units. That's people like us who pay taxes, and corporations and taxable entities. How many taxpayers are there in the United States? And when you think about that debt and divide the $34 trillion by the number of taxpayers in America, each taxpayer owes $264,000. I'm going to round it down. It's $264,090. So it's $264,000 for me. It's $264,000 if you pay taxes, for you. Everybody who pays taxes is on, you know, basically our share of that debt. It's $264,000. Now, when you break it down over the number of citizens, it's only $101,000. So I guess it's a real bargain. You know, every man, woman, child, every citizen of the United States, according to the U.S. Census Bureau, if you take $34 trillion and divide it by the number of citizens, it's $101,000. Well, you know, I suppose, you know, we can check the couch cushions and the car cushions, scrape up $101,000 to bail out Uncle Sam. But the problem is half of the people, you know, roughly, are they don't pay taxes. They're young. They're children. And so when you look at the burden of that debt on the American tax-paying unit, the person who actually pays the taxes, at $264,000, and that's just to pay off the prior deficit spending. It's not this year's taxes. You're going to have to add your taxes to that number, but that's what it would take to clear the deck and start over. And that's never, ever going to happen, because most people in America who are taxpayers pay relatively small amounts. Might be 10 grand, 20 grand, whatever your tax burden is, but certainly not $264,000. So it begs the bigger question from the American perspective with this massive debt. And that's yesterday's news. I mean, everything they spent, that money's long gone. And then we've got the $1.66 trillion in current deficit spending, and all deficit spending gets added to the debt. That's why the debt number keeps going up and up and up and up, because first we blamed it on COVID, and then, you know, but today that number is becoming asymptotic. It's parabolic. It's just suddenly becoming a thing of itself when you have $1 trillion in interest on the national debt. And that is coming out of the tax base to pay interest on money they spent a long time ago, then you are going to have to tax more in order to maintain current spending, or you're going to have to borrow more money. And that's what the federal treasury is doing. I mean, when you look at the federal treasury, there's always been a robust market for federal debt. I mean, it's really the, I don't want to say the gold standard, but it was always the premier market for long-term debt was the United States market for debt, the debt market. So if you were a prudent person managing fiduciary funds or a trust fund or a union pension fund or a state employees pension fund or whatever, the prudent person rule requires you to go to safety and liquidity. And I talked about liquidity again yesterday, that the Dallas Federal Reserve president suddenly made a public statement over the weekend that was picked up, where there was some concern about liquidity within the debt markets. And of course, if you're managing a big state pension fund or a union pension fund or a money market fund, that perks the ear. And that's why it was reported in the media, because you usually don't hear things like that from Federal Reserve presidents. And you start to think, wow, is there a problem? Well, you take that big debt market, and ultimately, you look at the current levels of spending, which Congress could do something about. I mean, they could literally cut spending today, but they would have to cut back on defense spending, which is how we operate around the globe. And there's a lot of political built into defense. When you look at the State Department, who's in charge with dealing with foreign countries and has been since George Washington, Secretary of State, and you look at the Defense Department, which, you know, most of us think, well, those are the people who are going to keep us safe if the Russians show up or the Chinese show up. We'll catch them at the coast and chase them away. Well, it's not that way. I mean, it's much more complicated on a global level. When you look at the defense budget and the intelligence budget and the Secretary of State's budget, the diplomatic budget, it's all intertwined into a global policy that is very, 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 very expensive. And you don't see even, you know, the British Empire, you know, used to rule the world. The sun never set on the British Empire. Well, today they don't manage or even pretend to manage the globe anymore. We do that. Same thing with the Germans and the French and you know, the Canadians and everybody else. It becomes very difficult and expensive. Even the Russians don't have the extent of colonization and interrelations. So it's a very expensive piece. And the question is, when you have taxpayers, and I think we had estimated yesterday somewhere between 150 million and 200 million of taxpaying units, humans plus corporations or entities, then at some point you have to start asking the question, and I asked it yesterday, is how much can you burden that captive population with, you know, $1.66 trillion and kick the can down the road deficit spending, $34 trillion and what we blew over the last, you know, decades, how much more can that population take before things start to crumble? And I think you're starting to see that in the infrastructure and the interior, as well as the standard of living of a lot of people. You know, when you think about it, our vice president said that the average American doesn't have $400 for an emergency. That's pretty scary. And I believe her. I mean, she's vice president. Why should I not believe the vice president of the United States when she comes out and says $400 to your name, and the vast majority of Americans don't have that? What it tells you is we are not a rich people. And when we think about how the government is spending money, after World War II, we were on top of the heap. We got in late. We had, you know, ramped up our infrastructure. Nobody bombed us. The Japanese, they bombed Little Island. It wasn't even a state. It was a territory, because Hawaii didn't become a state until 1959. But the point is, we came out of that unscathed. We had a strong currency, and then we quickly became the global currency during the Marshall Plan and the rebuilding of Europe and Asia. And at the end of the day, we had it good for a long time. But we're still spending like it's 1949, and it's not 1949. It's not. It's 2024, and at the end of the day, we have never had debt burden like we have today. $34 trillion is a vast amount of money, and we're not even meeting our current spending, and that's why we continue to see these very large deficits. Now, I applaud, and yesterday I maybe was a little sarcastic, but I applaud the conservatives in Congress who are frantically trying to do something about it. But at the end of the day, this is a problem that is going to take a national reset as to how the United States spends money, or we are going to spend ourselves to the point where we literally become irrelevant. And it could very well be, when you look at a global population of six, I'm using a small number, 6 trillion people, let's say it's, 6 billion people, and we're 333 million, we are fast becoming a small country. And if we're a small country with the largest debt on the globe, and the largest deficits, and we're running around spending money all over the place, and we're not really seeing a lot of political bang for the buck, that's how we spend ourselves broke. And at some point, we don't matter anymore, and the United States stops being relevant. That's why the British Empire stopped being relevant. It really, literally, at one point, the sun never set on the British Empire. They effectively controlled pretty much the global commerce. Well, if you look at the UK, England, whatever, UK today, they no longer pretend. They are in a position to try and compete with European nations, but they're not running the world because they basically spent themselves right out of it. You just simply cannot maintain that type of a global presence on a small population base. Now, if we were China with 1.5 billion or India with 1.5 billion, that might be a different thing because you can grow your economy and tax people and you got a great big economy, but we're not. So that leaves me with the final thought of the day is, with this respect to 10 million people pouring across the border And of course, we're all worried about these are illegal immigrants and, you know, half the Chinese army is showing up and all this stuff, all these theories. But the reality is, could it be that those folks in power understand that we are getting to a tipping point and we better jack up our population, our taxpaying base, because the current taxpayers at $264,000 each are tapped. So, you know, could it be, and it's tinfoil hat stuff, but let's ask that question. This is, you put our critical thinking tinfoil hat on and ask that question. Is this policy, is there more to this policy than meets the eye? I'll let you with that thought for today. We can maybe talk more about that tomorrow. Anyway, thanks for tuning in. Give Swiss America a call and have a great afternoon. Bye.